Hello and welcome to the Island Library. I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
And I'm Jo from JCU.
And this is episode 7, which is my lucky number.
Do you know what? It's my lucky number too.
What a crazy world.
It is a crazy world.
So this week I read Clap When You Land by Elizabeth Acevedo, and you read
What If It's Us by Becca Albertalli and Adam Silvera.
Lovely stuff.
So I said their names wrong. I'm so sorry to the diehard fans, but I did listen to a YouTube video where someone said the name several times so I could try and pronounce it correctly.
That is fair, and I have a similar feeling. I'm like, Elizabeth Acevedo, I'm like reasonably confident that that's not a complete butchering, but if it is, I apologize sincerely. Please correct me. I will do better. So I'm gonna read my blurb, Jo will read her blurb, and then in our normal format I will pitch and discuss my book, give my rating, say whether I'm taking this to the Island Library, and then we'll swap places and do it all again, but with Jo's book. Clap When You Land. Camino lives for her father's visits to the Dominican Republic. But this year, on the day when his plane is supposed to land, Camino arrives at the airport to see crowds of crying people. In New York City, Yahaira is called to the principal's office, where her mother is waiting to tell her that her father, her hero, has died in a plane crash. Separated by distance and Papi's secrets, the two sisters are forced to face a new reality in which their lives are forever altered. Now, Camino and Yahaira are both left to grapple with their grief, their newfound love for one another, and what it will take to keep their dreams alive.
Wow.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, yours sounds super intense. Okay, my blurb. Complete opposite of yours. Meet Arthur and Ben. Arthur is only in New York for the summer, but if Broadway has taught him anything, it's that the universe can deliver a show-stopping romance when you least expect it. Ben thinks the universe needs to mind its own business. If it had his back, he wouldn't be carrying a box of his ex-boyfriend's things. But after a chance meeting at the post office, the boys leave wondering what exactly the universe does have in store for them. What if they can't find each other again? What if they do and they can't nail a first date? What if Arthur tries too hard to make it work and Ben doesn't try hard enough? What if life really isn't like a Broadway musical? But what if it is?
Ooh, very intriguing.
Yes. So please, please, please take it away with your pitch.
Okay. Right, let me just grab my pitch. I've also had a warm scone just appear on my desk, which is what that was, by the way.
Sometimes, right, Laura gets food delivered to her through the podcast, and it is the most amazing thing, because I feel like I get shunned into my office for the whole recording, and my husband's too scared to even come up the stairs. He's like so terrified of either going to the bathroom because it's next to the office.
Oh, bless him.
He does go, but he just, even like in the dead of the night, isn't it, you make a noise and you're like, oh my god, that was so loud, and it's not actually that loud.
Yeah.
But I love that you get food delivered during the podcast. That's amazing.
Okay, right, Clap When You Land pitch. When Camino's father dies on his way to visit her, she loses more than her only remaining parent. The loss of her dad is also the loss of the limited financial stability that she and her aunt have in the Dominican Republic. It's the loss of the future she envisioned. It's the loss of safety in her neighbourhood. What she gains, unexpectedly, is a sister. Yahaira grew up in New York, idolising her father, and although she had glimpsed a fragment of his double life before he died, the existence of a sister is as shocking to her as it is to Camino. Clap When You Land is complicated, bruising, and utterly beautiful, a story of young women finding hope and support in the midst of grief.
Ooh, okay.
It is. It's very interesting.
Also, every time you say clap, I want to go.
So somehow I completely missed when I bought this book that it's written in verse, not prose. I don't know how that slipped by me, but when I opened the book and I saw, that it's written in verse, I was not thrilled because it's not really my favourite. But I was totally wrong to doubt it. And partly because of the fact that it is in verse, it's a bit of a quicker read. And also because I literally did not put it down once I started reading. I read it in a single evening. I read it through in like a few hours. And I was just completely hooked by it. It's told in, it sort of switches perspectives from Camino to Yajaira. So Camino lives in the Dominican Republic with her aunt, Tia. Her mother died about 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And her dad visits her every summer and spends the summer with her. So he stays there over her birthday and then goes back to America. Yajaira lives in New York with her mum and most of the year with her dad, but he disappears every summer, supposedly for work.
Right.
So these two girls do not know of each other's existence at the start of the book.
Okay.
One of the, basically the first chapter from Camino's point of view, or the first section, because it kind of isn't really in chapters in a conventional way. The first section is from Camino's point of view, and she's going to the airport, she's going to pick her dad up. She knows exactly what flight, because it's the same flight that he always gets. The same flight comes in at the same time. But when she gets to the airport, like it says in the blurb, people are crying. There's a notice up. The plane's gone down. They don't know if anybody survived. And she is obviously devastated. She doesn't quite accept at first. She doesn't want to believe that her dad was on it. Eventually, it is confirmed that there have been no survivors. And this completely upends her whole world for so many reasons. I mean, obviously she loves her dad and this is devastating news, but also her dad sends money. He sends money for her education. She goes to a really good school, but that means it's very expensive and there's no way that she'll be able to afford to keep that up with her dad gone. He also pays for her and her aunt to live in a slightly nicer house, so they've got a bit more security, they've got a bit more safety. And they're protected from like flooding and stuff. They've got a generator so that if the power goes out, which happens semi-regularly, you know, they've still got lighting and their fridge still works, that kind of thing. All that is suddenly in jeopardy. And also there's this guy in the neighborhood, El Cerro, who he's basically a pimp. He preys on girls who don't have brothers or fathers to protect them. And Camino's dad has been sending him money to get him to stay away from her, which obviously...
Oh, no.
He's dead. Suddenly El Cerro comes sniffing around and he's like, well, you know, you're gonna need somebody, you're gonna need somebody, may as well be me. So that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's like in the midst of everything else she's trying to deal with, she's got that. So that's her side. And then we're also seeing Yajaira, who grew up in New York. Her mum is also from the Dominican Republic but has never been back there with Yajaira. Yajaira was like a chess prodigy, but she has stopped playing for reasons that are revealed later. And she was pissed off with her dad before he left because she'd got a bit of information that suggested that he had this kind of double life going on, but she didn't know anything about the sister.
Yeah.
Now, over the course of the book, eventually these two girls come to know about each other's existence. And then eventually... they meet.
How old are they both?
They are 16, 17, I think, from memory.
Both of them?
Yeah, they're like a couple of months apart.
Oh.
Yeah. So you find out that their dad basically married both of their mums, but one... So he married Yajaira's mother, and then a couple of months later, back in the Dominican Republic, he married Camino's mother. So obviously that marriage is technically not legit because it came second. But I think Camino was born first, marginally. Because I think that makes sense, because Camino's birthday is over the summer and her dad's always there for her birthday. But he's always back in New York by the time it's Yajaira's birthday. So I think that's
right, okay.
Sort of autumn. Yeah. So these two girls, these two characters have really distinct characters and distinct personalities. They've got a lot in common, but they're very clearly different people. Obviously, Camino is a little harder due to the life that she's had and the way that she's grown up, as well as being living in a very poor area and being, well, kind of comparatively more secure than some of the people in her community. She's still not exactly well off. She also helps out with her aunt. Her aunt is kind of, she does a bit of like village healing. She helps people who are sick or dying, and Camino helps her out with that. So she's got to be pretty tough. And what with like El Cerro sniffing around as well, she's had to grow up pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yajaira has had a much softer life in comparison, but she is really interesting because she struggles a bit with her identity because she feels Dominican, but she's never been to the Dominican Republic. And so she's like, do I have any claim to that part of my identity? So there's an interesting element of that, sort of not quite knowing where she belongs. She's also gay. She's in a relationship with this girl who is absolutely lovely. And like their relationship is just one of the sweetest things. So the girl's called Dre, which I'm pretty sure is short for something like maybe Andrea or something, but I'm not 100% sure. I couldn't remember and I couldn't find it when I was flicking through a moment ago. But yeah, their relationship is just absolutely lovely. She's got quite a kind of black and white view of right and wrong, which Yahara finds a little bit jarring sometimes because she's got a bit more of a sense of how things are, tend to be more complicated than that. But they're really lovely with each other. And I kind of like that she's obviously quite a stable presence in Yahara's life. And with all of the other drama that's going on over the course of the book, although you get enough to see that it's not, you know, they clash over some things, they disagree over some things, but they seem to be really solid and really good together. And it's nice to have that as a cornerstone of Yahara's life and her sort of something that she can rely on. So that's really sweet. The writing in this book is just brilliant. It's not overly floral. It's not especially dramatic, but it just completely swept me up and swept me away. I felt completely transported. It was amazing. My husband was trying to get my attention at one point and took him like three times trying to say something to me because I was just not in the room at all. I was in the Dominican Republic and I was busy. Thank you very much.
That's quite interesting as well, because it's like you said, when you picked the book up, you didn't expect it to be in the format that it was. So it's really nice that that's actually paid off, that it was a pleasant surprise in the end.
Absolutely. I laughed and I cried and I cried and I cried. But I'm a crier anyway. So I cry at the happy and I cry at the sad. There were both in this story.
Well, I mean, right off the bat, the dad died. So yeah. Right off the bat, you're like, ah!
Absolutely. It's like, oh my God. Okay, so I will pick out a couple of things. So one thing, a sort of a content warning for people who might want to read it, there is, so obviously there's like the stalking behaviour and some sort of sexual abuse, sexual assault are things that happen within the story. So that's something to watch out for. Nothing gets too graphic, but it's very emotionally intense. So that is something to be aware of. Although Yahara and Camino are very different characters, and they do have a very distinct voice some of the time, there were definitely moments where I lost track of whose perspective we were reading from and had to go back and check like the chapter heading or whatever. I think that's kind of unavoidable, especially when you're writing in this very pared down form, that there are going to be moments where it gets a little bit confusing. But I just thought I'd throw that in there, because otherwise I feel like I'm just singing endless praises. it's like there has to be something. Also, time wise there's a long time before the girls learn about each other, before they meet, which I would have liked to either condense that a bit or make the book longer so I can have more time of them getting to know each other and spending time together when they do eventually end up in the same place. I think the way it was done was stunning. It's so interesting, the kind of way that they both have very mixed feelings, as you might expect to discover that they have this half-sister out there. And I think that complexity was really beautifully handled. The fact that they're kind of, because given that they've just lost their dad, to suddenly be handed a new family member is like, oh, okay, is this somebody who'll feel the same way I do, who will understand what I'm going through right now? Then there's the whole element of, how could my father hide this from me? Yeah. Who was he really? There's a quote at the beginning of the blurb that I don't think I read out when I was reading the blurb. I'm the child her father left her for in the summers, while she's the child my father left me for my entire life, which I think really beautifully sums up the kind of conflict there.
Yeah.
Like both of them feel like they've had something taken by the other, but also are very aware that they have taken something by existing at the same time. I know it's a complicated set of emotions, but I think it's handled in a really balanced, sympathetic way.
Do we get any not like point of view, because I know it's just from these two, but do we get any sort of emotional feedback from the alive mom?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So for one thing, the fact that she's never been back to the Dominican Republic, I can't remember if this is explicit or if I read between the lines a bit here. I feel like she says outright that it's partly because she didn't want to go back there, because she and Camino's mum were friends before. Joe's eyes just like out of her head.
Plot actual twist. Wow.
Yeah. So he met Camino's mum first and then met Yahara's mum through her, goes off and marries the one he met second, but then comes back to marry the one that he apparently loved all along. So Yahara's mum feels enormously betrayed. There's like deep betrayal and humiliation and anger in her that come out in different ways. She definitely seems to have kind of compartmentalized on the surface, and she knew when he was going away over the summer, she knew that it was to go back to the Dominican Republic to spend time with his other daughter. She also knows that
know the other one existed?
Yeah. I probably should have done. So that's, you don't know that for quite a long time. So spoilery, but not like, basically Yahara has like a little piece of the puzzle from quite early on, but doesn't know how much her mum knows until later. And then you learn. But as somebody who knows that the other daughter existed and that the other mother is dead, you kind of have this other perspective. So you get the sense that Yahara's mum knows more than she's told Yahara. It's quite well done in that as the reader, you know more than the point of view characters, and that gives you a new insight into the behavior of certain other characters. So I think that's really interesting when you're reading. Like the mum's perspective is really interesting, and the way, obviously, her grief over his death is really complicated by the fact,
kind of overshadowed, isn't it, by the many rich emotions that this woman is going through.
Absolutely. And, you know, he was going to, if he hadn't had that whole affair, then he wouldn't have been on that plane. On the other hand, if she had allowed him to bring the daughter and make her part of their family, he also wouldn't have been on that plane. So, and that isn't kind of explored, but you feel that it's there in her conflicted emotions over his death.
Yeah.
Camino has a friend in the Dominican Republic as well, who's really a really lovely character, Carmine. I don't know if you'd pronounce it Carmine or Carmine. Sorry, Carlene or Carline, who is pregnant and works herself to the bone, but is a really sweet presence in Camino's life. Very understanding, a really solid friend, kind of almost the equivalent of what Dre is to Yahara, although they're not in a relationship, obviously.
Sorry, I was laughing because I was like, plot twist, the dad is also the father of this baby.
He is not. We know that the father of this baby is in the picture. Although, fun fact, basically all of the characters that you spend any time with in this story are women.
Which is nice. That's
really
different.
Lovely. Yeah. You've got the father. So Carlene's boyfriend, the father of her kid, is sporadically about. He works really hard as well, so that's why you never see him. It's not that he's like an absent father. He's very, he really wants to help make a better life for his kid and his girlfriend, but he's not really in the story very much. You've got a couple of male characters who you were kind of aware of on the periphery. There's a guy who Camino gets a lift to the airport with right at the start. He gives her a lift to pick her dad up before they know that the plane's gone down, and he's kind of a sympathetic character, but you only see him like twice. And then you've got the pimp character, obviously, who is not pleasant.
Pimpy Joe.
So, yeah, and that's basically all of the male characters who play, who show up more than once from memory. There are others who are mentioned or, again, like pop in and out, but basically all of the characters that you spend real solid periods of time with in this story are women. And they're so different and so layered and complicated and fascinating. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm not going to give anything away about the last sort of third of the story, but I will say that there are just some beautiful moments of women understanding each other and supporting each other that blew me away.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else that I had kind of planned to talk about. No. So my shell rating for Clap When You Land is 5 shells.
Ooh.
I loved this book. Loved it, loved it, loved it. So yesterday I had to, because I'm moving next week, I got rid of fully half of my some 330 odd books. And part of the process was like, I categorized them all by genre roughly, and then picked out my top 10 and then any others that I couldn't bear to lose.
Like you're going to an island library.
Kind of, yeah, that was on my mind. I was like, well, the ones that I've said yes to on the library, they're an easy win. And this was one of the first ones I was like, definitely keeping that 100%. I'm going to want to read that again. So yeah, 5 shells, hands down.
Would you take this to your island library?
Yes, ding, I would.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, and now I feel like suddenly I'm questioning my previous choices, because this is the, you know how when you like meet someone, you're like, this is the person, this is the one. That's how I feel about this book. Like having read it, this needs to be in my life forever. I'm in love with this book. So yeah, hands down, this is coming to the island library with me. You can pry it from my shipwrecked hands. You can try.
That's amazing.
So do you think you would read this book?
Yes, mainly because I have a lot of questions that I feel like only the book can answer. And also just because of what you just said as well, was really just added the little cherry to the top about when you meet somebody and you know it's the one. Like I haven't heard you talk that passionately about a book in a while. So yes, I am definitely going to read it based off your pitch.
Cool. I think you'll love it.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. What If It's Us? This is my pitch for What If It's Us by Becky Albertalli and Adam Silvera. What if you find a boy outside a post office who makes your heart jump out of your chest? What if you foolishly forget to ask his name and pine over him for days? You obviously put up a notice on a board in a coffee shop he frequents because his t-shirt said he did, and hope for the best. Sometimes the universe is horrid, giving heartaches out like it enjoys it. But sometimes it's wonderful, and that is how Arthur meets Ben, his first real boyfriend.
Oh, that sounds so cute.
Just gonna smash straight off and say this is the fluffy book you need in your life.
Okay.
This is 400 and something pages of pure teenage fluff. And what I mean by that is there are moments in this book where you might, as a mid-20s to 30-year-old, read this book and go, oh, why are you being such an idiot? But it's so typical of very emotional teenage romance, to the point that when you sort of have that out-of-body experience, you go, oh god, no, don't do this. You also remember you had that same argument with someone that you were falling in love with. It's an absolutely beautifully fluffy book. The interesting thing about this is that I read about why these two authors decided to work together. So Becky Albertalli is the author of Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda.
Okay.
And Adam Silvera is the author of They Both Die at the End. And both their books came out at the same time. And they both absolutely loved the other one's book.
Aww.
And then began working together. And I think they have done a couple of other books together. I say this as I'm scanning my bookshelf, but I'm sure I've seen that they've done other books. So obviously they love working together, which I thought was just really interesting, because I don't think I've read a book by two authors yet.
Hmm.
This is also a gay romance, LGBTQ+, because I forget all the letters, because I'm just marginally dyslexic, so I'm going to do the plus. Arthur's mum is a lawyer for a firm that also has an office in New York, and they also have an office in Georgia, I think it is. Yes, Georgia. And he basically comes with his mom and his dad's there too, to work for the summer at this lawyer's office as like a free internee sort of thing. I don't know if he gets paid. He does seem to have money, but I don't know. Yeah, not 100% sure. Might have just skimmed over that just to get into like the romance of the book. So he's currently out on a coffee order when he runs into Ben. So Ben is wearing a t-shirt that has the name of this coffee shop on it, and he's carrying this box. And Arthur, before the summer, had only come out at prom, so his coming out, him coming out, was still very fresh for him. Whereas Ben's been out for a long time and has had a serious boyfriend previously, which is why he's got the box of his stuff. His name's Hudson, which I thought was a really interesting name, and I really liked it. And the reason I say that is because it's the name that Arthur finds. He finds this ripped label, and that's the only name he's got going off. Because Ben knows Arthur's name from the conversation, but Arthur does not know Ben's name.
Okay.
Because as they are sort of flirty bantering with one another, a flash mob breaks out. Just like the most New York thing ever. Which is exactly what Arthur thinks, because he's from Georgia. He's massively into Broadway. He's like absolutely obsessed with going to see Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen. And he's just, he's in the Hamilton lottery every single week because he just wants to get tickets. And that's, just even the beginning that. Of the setup is just brilliant. So it was literally a little bit like, how are they going to do this meet cute? Because on the front of the book, the way they've done the artwork is it's like a poster that says like, what if it's us, which is the title. The top it says, are you the boy from the post office? And then at the bottom it's got loads of little pieces of paper that, you know, that you can pull off.
Yeah.
And it says, want to give us a second chance, which I was like, what? So they already know each other. But as I delved, I'm not gonna do spoilers, so I'm gonna see if I can go a second week without doing that. But this isn't a really big spoiler, but they tend to do this thing called a do-over. So as the blurb mentioned before about what if they can't get it to work and what if they can't nail the first date, when they finally do track down the other one, everything sort of moves at 100 miles an hour because they obviously both understand they've only got the summer. For Arthur, this is his first relationship, so he gets very swept up immediately. And he's in a different city, and I think the city as well, because he's from Georgia, is very like fast-paced, so he ends up becoming quite fast-paced. He also is a very excitable being, and it's amazing to be in his head. It's just fantastic because the book is told from both boys' point of view, and it interchanges, so each chapter it changes, which is really nice because when they are doing the dates or when they're hanging out with one another, you get both points of view, which is super nice. Currently, while Arthur is doing his internship and such, Ben is in summer school because he did not do very well at school. Unfortunately for Ben, in his summer school class is his ex-boyfriend Hudson, and it's a bit complicated, but there's a girl called Harriet as well who's friends with Hudson, Ben, and Ben's best friend, Dylan. So Harriet is also there, and Harriet used to be the girlfriend of Dylan, who's Ben's best friend, and Ben was obviously going out with Hudson, so they would double date, but both relationships fell apart.
Right.
And the friendship group is like very fragmented now. So Ben and Dylan are still best friends. Well, they're like long-term best friends, like they're super nerdy together. And then Harriet and Hudson are best friends. And it makes Ben feel very confused and it just complicates things massively for him, which I was then unsure as why he had the box of stuff to begin with. But it does explain that he took the box with him on his first day of school, but Hudson didn't turn up. So then he was like, well, I don't want to keep holding on to this box. And we also find out that this is very early on in the story, so I've not really done any spoilers, that the reason Ben and Hudson broke up is that there's something that happened, which you find out a little bit later on, and wires got crossed and they both walked away from one another. Ben was like assuming this was a fight, and Hudson assumes that they were broken up, so Hudson kissed somebody else. So then Ben broke up with him. So for Arthur, at several points in the story, he's very jealous about Hudson. And also further complicated by the situation that Ben does not tell him about Hudson being at summer school with him. So that's another interesting development that comes about. Characterisation. They're just two beautiful boys. So Arthur is, like I said, he's staying in New York with his parents. His parents are really interesting because it sounds like in Georgia, they both have their own independent careers that go really, really well. But since the transition to New York, since the summer move, Arthur's dad is not doing so well because he's a freelancer and it's really hard for him to advertise for jobs in a city that he's not in. Which I would, like, for us in England isn't really an issue because England, like, is, but in America that's like a huge thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of distance between like a city to a different city, so that was really, really interesting. And they kind of bicker quite a lot, which you're not really too sure where that's going to go, but the bickering becomes quite uncomfortable for Arthur, and he has like some internal worries about that he doesn't really vocalize. He just keeps that to himself. He's also got two friends who he is constantly talking to via text message, called Jesse and Ethan. And the interesting about that is that there's three best friends, and I mean, I saw this coming from a mile off, so this is a spoiler for later on, but you get the sense that this is going to happen when you know it's a three and one of them has come out. But obviously Jesse and Ethan end up dating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it builds up into these situations where all these people aren't talking to one another, they're telling each other the truth, which is very similar to the snippets that went live to advertise for this podcast. But it's so true that if people spoke to each other a lot more, for saying how much these people are all talking to one another, conversating with each other, none of them are very honest about their feelings, and they just bottle them all up and then they explode.
That's infuriating. It's bless them, it's adorable, but it's also, you kind of want to shake them.
Yeah. And I mean, when I say that I called this, as literally their first names got introduced, I was like, they're going to end up together. That's the situation.
And lo and behold,
that happened. But there are so many other beautiful moments within this book that sort of make that spoiler less forgivable for me. Like, it didn't really taint the story. And it was really nice that he still had something, even when he was in New York. Because I was a bit worried, like, what is he going to have? He does have some good, funny work relationships. Doesn't also sound like he gets a lot of work done. So I don't know how he managed to. I mean, I guess if his mum wasn't working there, he might have lost his job. But yeah, there's some really interesting friendship dynamics, which play out at the same time, which sort of lead this very fast-paced relationship into something very beautiful in the group. And they're all, I don't want to give too much away, but it's just how it's handled, because they're all of the same age, that it's really nice. And also in Ben's world, Ben's parents are also together, and Ben is, I don't want to say, he's not as well off, I can never say the name right, Puerto Rican. Did I say that right?
I think so. I've heard Puerto Rican.
So I apologise to anybody who is offended by this, but Ben is Puerto Rican and his parents are very close and they are religious, but they are very in the mindset of love who you love, it doesn't matter. They're not homophobic. They are very welcoming and lovely people. And Ben goes through a bit of a crisis to do with his heritage, because he doesn't look Puerto Rican and he doesn't know Spanish, and he feels very isolated sometimes, and he thinks it's like another thing that's just going against him as a person, and he sort of bottles that up quite a lot. And yeah, it's you can understand a lot of where some of his very rich emotions come from, and he's very prideful about money and stuff, and it sort of comes up between him and Arthur, but it's sort of really well handled. It doesn't take away from the fact that they are both teenage boys. There's not any real big difficult conversations that feel sort of out of character for them. It sort of mentions there is that teenage guilt that you get for realizing that you kind of maybe put your foot in it a little bit, but then soon enough all is forgiven in some sort of way. There's this really interesting thing that I'm not going to say that happens near the end of the book, and it sort of brings everything back to, because obviously, as all stories go, in meet cutes, they meet, life seems great, something happens, everything falls apart, boom, and then the ending. And in this one, you get an epilogue, which was quite nice. So there's this thing that obviously happens to kick the story back around, and it's all very it's very typical of what you would expect a young adult meet cute to be like, but it's handled in a way that is much better than it has been handled previously. And I actually would feel then it's almost close to being quite unique in its own way.
Okay.
And I think that is because both the authors of these books are also very well known for writing young adults and getting them really like hitting the nail on the head. And so it didn't feel overly romantic. It was very digestible would be the word I would probably use. And you smile and you smirk a little bit, but it's not like, oh, because I like romance. I love fluffy stuff, but it can't be like sickly sweet romance because it just puts me off. And then, like I said, there's an epilogue as well, which is really nice. And it sort of ties everything back up and leaves you just wanting a whole nother book. Really. There is also, the chapters are very short. Now, I remember I showed you the book last week and you were like, that is a chunky book. It is, but the chapters, I would, some of them are only a couple of pages long.
Oh, wow.
So it flicks point of view quite a lot, which is nice. And it's also then split into three parts, which again is my favourite thing. I love three-part books. But it's not split in the conventional way. So the first part is the will they, when they meet, and then they meet. And then the second one is, does sort of cover them falling, the falling out that always happens in these sort of books. But the third part is so much more than just them getting back together. It's also fixing a lot of the things that they both realise independently is wrong in their lives, which is really nice that they managed to add in a lot of other stuff that you wouldn't normally expect from a meet cute. So there is a lot of unresolved issues that they both help each other with, which is really, really nice. And then, like I said, there's an epilogue, which I was kind of like, ooh, because I don't want to say too much, so I'm just going to go, ooh. And then I was like, no, give me more. But yeah, that is What If It's Us. I could keep going on and on about how good it is, because I really, really enjoyed this. Similarly to yourself, I couldn't put the book down. I did start it only on Friday, but I finished it yesterday.
Wow.
But it was more that I had to stop myself because I was like, I'm giving myself a bit of a headache. And it was also on the back end of reading another book that I finished, and I was like, oh no, I need to read the book, the podcast book. And then I was literally a little bit like oversaturated with characters at this point. But it was very difficult to put down, and I was thinking about it constantly before I was able to pick it back up. Before I get into like my rating stuff, I am super interested in reading more of these two authors together, because I feel like their work really complemented each other, which was something I was a little bit worried about. Mm-hmm. Even though I have read a book by each of them independently, I've read both of the books that they are known for on the front of this, I was a little bit like, oh god. But I actually can't tell who wrote what.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, their voices just seem to complement each other. And I was going to Google it, but then I also don't want to ruin that for myself. So I don't know if they took a character each or if they maybe wrote different chapters. I don't know. But it's very seamless that you can't tell that it's two people's work, which is also a big worry for me when you write with somebody else. Like when I used to write fan fiction with other people, my voice always sounded very distinctly different to other people's voices. But I didn't find that in this book. So yeah, so that's What If It's Us. In terms of seashell ratings, it's such a close five. And it bugs me why I can't give it a five. I've not listed anything that's wrong with it. I feel like it's just like a four. I can't really go any higher than a 4.5 without getting to a five. It's a very strong 4.5, almost five. But I feel like I can't give it a five because the first book that I rated a five in this podcast was In 5 Years. Which still has blown me away. And I just, off the back of this, I read a different book that I would hands down give five, which I think I mentioned last week that I was going, it was torn between, which was Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid. And I read that and then I read this and I was like, I want to because I really did enjoy it. And I did love it, but I feel like it's a disservice to those books giving this book a five.
Right.
When I loved those two books, if that
makes sense.
So it's a very strong 4.5, and that's only to alleviate some of my guilt because of me loving those other books so much.
Fair enough. So the big question, would you take it to your island library?
I would.
Ha!
Yeah, I would. So mainly because you would lose yourself in this book. It's so easy to just step into it and not put it down. It's such an easy fluffy, comfortable, heartwarming read that you just find yourself sucked into this very, and when I say the short chapters actually help make the story because you get this sort of feeling of time,
yeah,
more so than you do if you had longer chapters, because I think you can forget how long a day is.
Sure.
But they actually do flick through days, so it's kind of like ramps it up a little bit, because as you're getting through the book you're like, oh my god, they've not got long left with one another, which I think really adds to it. So yeah, so this book would come with me on my shipwrecked island.
We got a twofer. We've both yeah. gone for another book on the island this week. Yeah. That's so exciting.
Would you read this book?
100% I would read that book. It sounds lovely.
It's so fluffy. And it really made me laugh when you were like, I read this like emotional read, and I was like, oh. If I'd picked the other book, we would have had a very different conversation. Mine was so fluffy, which was the perfect palate cleanser, really. But yeah, it is so, so adorable. They did such an awesome job. And it's also one of these, I think I said this about In 5 Years when I said, I think this is the book I wish I would have written. I feel like that's a different category to this. I wish I was one of the authors that worked on this.
Mm.
And in a different way, if I was writing YA romance, this is the book I wish I would have written. Because it's just so easily digestible. Like, it's literally the easiest read. Oh. And that's like credit to them. It's not because it's easy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's easy because it's fun and fluffy. And there was no justice for anyone. There was no justice needed. Everyone.
Same in Clap When You Land. Everyone got justice.
Yeah. So what an exciting podcast this was.
This was so good.
We're both winning.
Yeah.
So,
happy days.
Question of the week.
Okay.
What have you watched this week that has changed your life? It could be anything. It could be like a Twitter video, a YouTube video, TV show.
So I've started watching Community, which my brother has been recommending for ages. And partly it came up because I was watching a video or talking about how the characters in The Big Bang Theory, like their geekiness and social awkwardness is used to disguise the fact that they're just like terrible people and they're really misogynistic and just selfish. And they had just like an aside in the video where they were like, a socially awkward character does not have to be a horrible person. Take Abed from Community. And I was like, okay, fine, I will watch Community. Enough universe. Yeah. I'm doing it. And Abed is now one of my very favourite TV characters of all time. And so that has changed my life because I didn't know he existed a few weeks ago, or in fact, a week ago. And now I love him. So, yeah.
Are you loving the TV show as much as you're loving the character?
So the TV show I'm enjoying. Yeah. Not all of the jokes fully land with me. Some of them I'm a bit, meh. I think it relies a bit on that thing where, you know, it's saying things that are not PC, but they come from characters who are obviously awful. So you're supposed to recognise that the creators aren't endorsing that point of view. But I don't find it that funny. Sexist and racist jokes, although I get what they're doing, and that it's supposed to be criticising that point of view. And it's not that it's totally, totally awful, and it's not a constant barrage of it, which is why the show is still fun. But there's this one character who's often just saying things, and I'm just like, that's not funny, it's just annoying, please stop. I sort of think they wouldn't, so I don't love that element of it. I'm enjoying the show, I'm still watching it, I'm having a great time with it. There are lots of characters that I enjoy a lot. Troy and Abed. Have you watched Community?
I haven't, no, but Donald Glover's in it, isn't he?
Yes, so Donald Glover plays Troy, who's like jock character, and he and Abed are super close friends, and they have the cutest and most hilarious friendship. I love Abed. Troy and Abed together are hilarious. The show is fun. It's just this one character, basically, I wish they would just write out, but I think he's in it for the long haul, unfortunately. So that was a really long answer to the random question. What have you watched this week?
So I actually, the other night, watched American Son on Netflix. It was a play on Broadway, I think it was, and they sort of got commissioned to make it into a film, and it's on Netflix now. It's got Kerry Washington in it, who I absolutely adore. She's like one of my favourite actresses. And oh my God. So the concept of it, it's set all in sort of one room, like a play. It's literally the play, but just in a telly, like a film version of it. And Kerry's character, Kendra, is looking for her son, and she's at the police station, and she's waiting to find out about what happens to her son, because her son hasn't come home, and he's 18. And it's a very For me, there are a lot of mixed reviews out there about it, but I implore anybody to watch it and come up with your own opinion on it, especially with the current Black Lives Matter protests and the recognition that it's getting, and the fact that we, as I say, as in me and you, Laura, as white people need to do better. And this it really highlighted that it plays a lot, and it's got a lot of very difficult narratives and conversations about race and about assumptions to do with race, and especially because immediately you don't know, but you later find out that the son who's missing, Jamal, is actually mixed race, so his dad's white. So it has some really interesting sort of conversations, and it's only like an hour and a half long, but I literally was glued to watching this, and I violently sobbed at the end. It was very eye-opening. It was very raw, and I feel like I've been trying to read and digest a lot about my own white privilege that I have, and watching this and digesting another form of medium was just very, I came away from it and I was like really upset for the characters, and obviously, but I was more upset because this actually happens all the time. And which obviously no one who is a person of color really needs to hear that another white person is crying about what they have to go through, but I was just very deeply affected by it, and I've said to my husband, like, you need to watch this, and we need to do better as a household as well. Like, we need to just do better generally. And so it sparked a lot of very interesting conversations in my house. So that's what I watched, and I feel very changed by it. It was very, very raw. I personally would give it a 10 out of 10 because I literally could not stop watching it, but it has got a lot of mixed reviews. I think a lot of people really struggled when I was reading through the reviews on IMDb. A lot of people seem to have not realized that it was a play,
and been very
confused by the setup,
and
feel that it's very dramatic and that some of the conversations don't really need to be had, but I feel like that's what added to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just obviously people can have completely different opinions. That's entirely what the point of our podcast is about books. But I do, if you've not seen it, I do employ anybody to watch it and just take something away from it, whatever that is.
Sure.
But on to a happier question.
Yes.
What are you going to read next week?
I actually haven't 100% decided. It might be, I'm just having a look, because there are two books.
I'm not doing the same. I haven't decided.
Yeah. There are two books that I had already bought that I haven't read yet that I should probably read before I buy something new. So it's probably either going to be The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle or Open Road Summer.
Seven deaths. Yeah.
All right, I'll read that next.
It'll be really nice to have a conversation about a book that I've already read. Very self.
Right. Ooh, that's what I'll read then.
I'm a little bit torn, mainly because I have a deadline for two books that are due out in the next month, so I might be bringing a ARC with me.
Oh, that's exciting.
That I have been sent. Or it might be Where the Crawdads Sing.
Which is a new one by Delia Owens.
So the only reason I'm torn between it is because I have to just check that. I like to know with the ARCs that it is sort of the final version and not some early version of it, because I would hate to be critical, positive or negative, of a book that might have gone through some immense changes before publication. So she needs to check that. But if two of the books are sort of appearing like they are just been downloaded off Scrivener, then I will probably go for the Crawdads. But I will see. I'll have a look.
Sure.
But yeah, I think we're done this week.
I think that brings us to the end. Yeah, thanks for chatting. It's been lovely.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Like, we're not sat in other people's homes.
I know. One day we'll be able to record this in the same place. That would be exciting.
That will be exciting. One day I will also have a microphone. So if you think, why does Joe not sound as crisp? Joe does not have a microphone yet. It's on Joe's Amazon wish list. But, you know, unprecedented time.
Absolutely.
But thank you so much for listening to us yet again. And I hope to see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.